Welcome to TTP Community. I am Bob DeMena, and here with me, as always, is the well-traveled Elliot Shipley.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Yeah. Now, I mean, I added another country. You added another continent.
Correct. Yeah. And we had an incredible experience. So on this podcast, we're going to talk about our trip to Morocco. We had stops in France there and back because we kind of did the layover hack where it was much cheaper to do that rather than fly direct. And we met up with our last week's guest, Eva Westerling. She runs the company Berber Adventure Tours. And we went to the desert. We went through Morocco. We saw multiple cities. And so this episode is going to take you through that entire itinerary.
Including Paris before and after.
Right. Hope you enjoy it.
The Traveler's Blueprint offers a travel journal and planner that is available for $7.99 on our website. It is a PDF, so you can fill it out online or in paper, and it is completely reusable. We also offer a Become Your Own Travel Agent 5-part video tutorial. Part 1 is navigation, 2 is booking airfare, 3 blogs, research, and reviews, 4 itinerary building, and 5 safety, cultural norms, and thoughtful travel. You can find that on our website, and it is $25.
We also offer travel consulting. So for more information on that, go to our website and feel free to send us a DM on social media or an email. Lastly, you can join us. And if you want to, you can be a part of our Travel Around Table series. That's where we sit down with a group of travelers, send us your email with your name, your website, and a few travel related topics that you enjoy discussing, and we will get back to you.
Welcome to the Traveler's Blueprint. Start designing your next adventure.
All right, let's jump into it. So we went to Morocco, huh?
We did it. We did a thing.
Yeah.
During a pandemic, which...
I hate that. I hate it so much. All right.
We are super millennials, right? We are doing a podcast. This is like the same thing as saying we're going to start a band.
We have been doing this for years.
No, it was pretty catchy then.
Not as catchy as it was once COVID hit, though. Then everybody had a podcast.
That's true.
So, you know, we're not that millennial. We're like partial millennials. Anyway, we went to Morocco. We also had spent some time in Paris. And today we're going to bring you through that itinerary. Big shout out to our good friend of the podcast, Eva Westerling at Berber Tour Adventures.
Berber Adventure Tours.
Yes.
Get it right.
Yep, Berber Adventure Tours. The second it came out of my mouth, I knew I said it the wrong way. Also, Hassan, Syed, Mohammed, like we met some incredible people on this trip. We started in Paris, spent some time there, flew to Morocco, Casablanca.
Spent some time there.
We started in Casablanca, didn't see it, flew there, Marrakech, then essentially road tripped it out to Merzouga.
Well, Essaouira first, and then out from Marrakech to Merzouga.
Right, you're right. And then
back.
From Merzouga, used it as a base, went out into the Sahara, spent a night out there, made our way back, and then spent some time in Marrakech before flying back to France.
And we're going to run through that trip. Stayed some time in Paris, and that's it. That's the end of the podcast. and
here we are. We're going to recap the entire thing, what to see, how to see it, the tour company that you should be booking with, that good stuff.
If you listened to last week's episode, you should know all about her. If you didn't listen to last week's episode, go back and listen.
Yeah, right. And so a lot of the information that she gave us last week, we actually lived through now. And it is pretty cool having had re-listened to that conversation with her after we went to the country. It was incredible to I guess reflect on the places that she said, go see this, go do this, and then having seen it myself and be able to think about what it's actually like there is pretty neat. All right, let's jump into it. We met up and we flew out of Newark straight to Paris. We arrived in Paris in the afternoon. And we headed straight to the Eiffel Tower.
Yep, right there. Well, no, wait. We forgot a very important part of this. So because we're traveling during COVID, there are a lot of precautions. So we should talk about that first and foremost with this trip. That we took a lot of precautions to make sure this trip was safe. And as international travelers during a pandemic, you got to do your duty and your due diligence to make sure you're not doing any kind of the spreading. So Bob and I took two PCR tests the 2 days before we flew out. One was to get us to Paris if we needed it as a failsafe. The second was to get us to Morocco from Paris if it was considered long enough. We ended up not needing either of them. But the regulations changed frequently.
We didn't end up needing either of the two tests that we took in the United States.
Yes. However, but as soon as we landed in Paris, we had a scheduled rapid PCR to get on our flight to Morocco. Mm-hmm. So we took that test. We were supposed to get our results within 24 hours. We actually ended up going back to the airport the next day, and we'll jump back to what we did in Paris, but we ended up going back to the airport the next day in the morning before our flight, tried to get our results, got the negative results, but didn't get the QR code, which was needed from CDEP, which is France's national health organization that tracks COVID vaccination. So we ended up missing our flight by about 30 minutes, and as Bob said, flew into Casablanca instead.
Yeah. Now, the riddle of the trip is how it took 2 hours to get a QR code for a negative test that we had in our hands. Whatever they're doing over there, it was just unorganized. And we missed our flight because of it. And it cost us about 5 hours on the trip. And it cost us a dinner with a previous guest that we really wanted to go.
Yeah, we were going to get dinner with Alice.
Yeah, and so it was really unfortunate that that happened, but I think a quote of ours from an old episode was, the thing with international travel is that it never goes as planned, and that we definitely experienced that on this trip, but you make the best of it, you roll with it, and you adapt. So, Paris, right.
Eiffel Tower.
We hit the Eiffel Tower. We see that. It was my first time in Paris. That was incredible to see for the first time, And from the Eiffel Tower,
we hung around that area for a little bit, walked around, and then got some photos. I did get a picture with the Sun for the Hummelstown newspaper, the Dauphin County, Lebanon area. That's very exciting. That'll be in. I don't know if it'll be that one with the Eiffel Tower or the one with the camels. We'll see.
Oh, they better bring the camels.
I mean, I'm going to send both.
Yeah,
or should I only send the camels?
I think send the camels.
All right, I'll send the camels. So we are walking around the Eiffel Tower area, got some good photos there, and then walked over to the Airbnb, set our stuff down, and then just walked around Paris for a little bit, got a fantastic macaroon. Like, it was a macaroon sandwich.
We need to find where that was. We need to Google where that place was, because the second I tasted that thing, I was on a different planet. I could not believe how fresh
incredible
it was. And I'm gonna say this on the podcast because I know my wife doesn't listen to me talk, because I guess she hears enough of me on a regular basis, but I brought her home macaroons from Paris. I brought her home like a box of, it was like 30 of them, like a ton of them. They did not compare to the one that we had that day. It was a chocolate macaroon, and it was a large one. It was like the size of like my fist almost, with caramel in it. It had either walnuts or...
It just had so much. It was amazing.
Uh-huh.
The biggest... I mean, if you think of like a cookie sandwich, like a ice cream cookie sandwich, it was like that, but with a macaroon filling. There was like Heath in there. There was dark chocolate. There was caramel. There was like espresso crumble on the top of it. I mean, my God.
We have pictures of it, but yeah, we never really looked where exactly that was. I'm sure you're going to end up finding it, but...
Yeah, you keep going and I'll get into it next.
Well, from there, we went to the Rue Claire, and that was the street with a bunch of restaurants. And we should say that it was actually raining this day, like drizzling on and off, very cold. We both were maybe a little bit thrown off by how cold it was. We walked the street. We ended up stopping somewhere random, grabbed oysters and champagne together in the rain under an awning of some restaurant. We actually didn't plan on getting oysters. The rest of the kitchen closed, and that was all that we could order.
They were delicious.
Yeah, they were pretty good. And we hung out there for a little bit. And because it was raining, we kind of switched up the itinerary a little bit. And we went to the War Museum, where Napoleon was buried. This is a pretty cool place. Yeah. And so we walked through this museum. They had history on Napoleon, obviously. Lots of French war history. And then it went into global war history, obviously, because of France's involvement in World War One and World War Two. So we walked through that. They had really neat uniforms. They had weapons, cannons, all the different types of guns and models, TVs, like showing different aspects of the war and France's involvement with it. Really cool if you're into war history. Pretty neat, like beautiful building too. So the architecture, like the actual museum itself, is awesome.
It's massive. It's a huge complex,
multiple stories, and a really good place to get out of the rain.
Yeah.
and so from there, did we do anything after that, or did we just head back? Because I think we were so tired.
No, we just, I'm pretty sure we just went back to the hotel or the Airbnb after that.
Yeah, I think so too. Long walk. Pretty early night, right? And
yeah, I think we stopped at the Airbnb and then we walked over to get dinner.
Yeah, we grabbed burgers. We sat at this French restaurant burgers. And the guy told us they were the best burgers in Paris. And you know,
obviously they were.
Yeah, it was a great burger. So grabbed burgers, went to bed early, and went to the airport.
Oh, wait.
Next day.
No, after the World War II Museum, we did get, I mean, it's Paris. You have to get like a little afternoon espresso or cappuccino with a little bite to eat. So we had that. I had that lemon bread. I think you had like
banana
bread. Ah. Mm-hmm. And it was like a block and a half away from the Eiffel Tower. Just amazing.
There was no shortage of cappuccinos in our very short time in France on either end of this Moroccan trip. We definitely drank a lot of cappuccino. So anyway, the next day we woke up, headed to the airport, had the issue with the QR code, not getting the QR code to allow us to board. We missed the flight.
Well, we should say in the morning, keep this in mind. And we specifically wanted to note this for the podcast because when breakfast places say they open at 7:30, that means their doors are open, but they're setting up and you might be able to get a cafe or a little bite to eat, but you will not be able to sit down to eat anything. And so that morning before our flight, it was still dark. It was a Sunday and it was pouring. And we were literally awning hopping to stay out of the rain.
Yeah.
And then we found a little patisserie place that had some fresh bread. I think we split a loaf of bread and a croissant for breakfast.
Oh, the memories. Yeah. And
then we saw the Statue of Liberty.
And then we did. Oh, you're right, man. I missed that.
And there's so much.
Yeah. I'm just eager to get to Morocco. So yeah, we saw the Statue of Liberty. And then we did have the opportunity to go back to our Airbnb, throw all of our clothes in the dryer, which was nice, before we headed to the airport.
Yes.
Then we had the issue with the QR code, missed our flight, talked to our girl Eva, who hooked us up last minute with one of the coolest guys we met the entire time, Muhammad, our driver. He drove from Marrakech to Morocco, which I think was like 2 hours.
Two and a half hours, yeah.
Met us there and then took us all the way back to Marrakech. And so that's where we got to know him a little bit.
Had a great conversation.
Great conversation. He was able to tell us about the culture of Morocco, his personal culture. You know, he got into his own kin and how his family works. And it was really interesting to talk to an individual living in the country and get some of the details you would not get as a normal tourist just going and seeing the sights. Like being able to spend hours with somebody that lives in a foreign culture was so cool. So cool. Like
He taught us about the Berbers and how the French and Islamic and how Morocco is like the furthest Western Islamic state. I mean, it was just so interesting. Stuff I had never even thought to ask about.
Right. And Elliot and I, of course, in our podcast interviewee fashion, were asking all these questions. You know, we didn't hesitate. So as he's talking, we're asking more questions and diving deeper and deeper. And we learned a ton just from the 2 hours immediately meeting him from Casablanca to Marrakech. And then he dropped us off. And that was our first experience in the square.
Yeah. Jemaa el Fna.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to say it.
I can tell.
Yeah. And so what a crazy place.
Yeah. It wasn't too crazy yet. But what we should say is that we got to our Airbnb and we still wanted a bite to eat. We checked in and we found these two Romanian dudes, right? Gergu and Matthias. Yeah. And they just got in as well. They're from Transylvania, so Hungary slash
Romania.
Mm-hmm. And we ended up grabbing dinner with them, and I think we all got the same dish, right? We got Tangier.
We all got the same thing, and then I got the tacos, though.
And you got the tacos, yeah, which are more like burritos, and you think they're paninis, but it's okay.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle. And it was they were delicious. They put French fries in them. Yeah. I think it was like beef with French fries. So good. Like, I think you were the one that said it, like a little sweet, but the tangine is a very traditional Moroccan dish.
We did not get tangine.
Sorry.
We got Tangier. Yes.
Tangier, you're right. Yes.
Which is different because Tangier is literally cooked underground. It's beef cooked underground in a pot, and it is unbelievably tender with almost a curry sauce and a ton of couscous.
Yeah.
So good. We have a video of them pouring it out.
Yeah. Great meal. Do we know the place of that restaurant, the name of
that
it?
Was
we went there twice.
Yeah, Cafe Medina Rouge.
Okay, right off the square. Yep. Highly recommend it. That's where we had our last meal. So we had our first and our last meal.
And that's true,
Oh, wow.
We got tacos for lunch.
Yeah. From there, we hit the Airbnb with our two new friends, Gergu and Matthias, and then Matthias.
And then Reda, who was the Airbnb manager. Yeah, we hung out with him.
You know, the guys hooked it up with some of their Johnny Walker, and we were able to have a toast to a nice new trip and experience that we were sharing together. That
was rooftop terrace,
rooftop Johnny Walker. Yeah, pretty cool way to end our first night.
So we meet up with Muhammad again in the morning, and we're taking our trip out to Essaouira, which is about a 3-hour car ride to the western coastline. And there are actually some cool Game of Thrones filming locations here, but we stop for breakfast. We have some absolutely amazing honey. And it was almost like I think it was orange blossom honey.
Right.
So absolutely delicious. And then make our way to Essaouira. We're hanging out there, walking around, meet up with our friend. We meet a friend there who ended up taking us to his store. Yeah, Mustafa. He was nice enough.
He was very nice. It was obvious that he was trying to finagle us into giving him money to have him show us around. Like, you know, we didn't really ask for it. We were aware that that's what he was doing, and we went along with it. I went to a shop, and I did buy some stuff for my wife from a shop. Because, you know, if you're listening to this, you have to keep in mind the impact COVID has had on the tourism industry, the people that you're visiting. And so don't just go and see. Spend some money, pump that economy up, right? Like, if you love to travel and you love to experience these cultures, there's really no better way to support them than spend your money there. So just make sure you do. So it was obvious that he was like, you know, trying to get some money out of us, which neither of us really minded. Again, we shopped at his thing, and then he shopped at his little shop, and then he showed us around, which was actually a really cool shop. He had really beautiful jewelry and these African type artifacts and stuff like that. So I actually really liked his shop anyway. And then he took us to the ramparts, the walls surrounding the city, and showed us the cannons.
Old fortifications.
Awesome. Yeah.
And Essaouira is extremely windy, so it should be known that there are, in the certain part of the bay, there are tons of windsurfers. It was really cool to see.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful little beach village. So you have this, I want to call it like an older town, but pretty new, relatively speaking, compared to the rest of Morocco from what we saw. This walled-in city, very cool port city, fishing city. The ports are massive, and you'll get to see
fresh
really
fish.
Fish that come out of there. And so we experienced that a little bit, and then we walked the beach. We grabbed fresh pomegranate juice.
Don't forget, we had that pretty incredible little breakfast in the Medina. And Medina, we should note, is the older part of the city.
Yeah.
So it's usually the walled. I think Medina literally means wall.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, or city. I forget which. But old town. Traditionally, they were walled. But yeah, we got an espresso with, I think, a crepe, pancake, and muffin. And that was delicious. That. And it was perfect for sightseeing. I was at the intersection of this pedestrian road. So lots of movement. It's crazy, the mopeds, the bikes, and the little construction vehicles.
Yeah.
Remember all that happening?
Yeah. And then we moved on. We actually ended up leaving the Medina, went to the beach, grabbed seafood.
Well, and the palm juice. Dish.
So we grabbed the pomegranate juice, fresh pomegranate juice.
So delicious.
You'll see the vendors, but Eva, and we're going to get to our experience with Eva, but Eva had told us that they're not always out there. So if you see them, I think it's only certain times of the year that they're there. And yeah, I mean, it's fresh pomegranate juice.
Yeah. And then Eva gave us a recommendation for lunch, which we ended up not going. We thought we were at the right place, weren't at the right place, but the lunch was still great. And Bob got this massive fried fish platter. And I just got like a grilled whitefish, but it was absolutely delicious. Bob's got some really cool photos of his.
Yeah.
And then.
Well, I was going to say, some of the information that I got for this trip was from Eva's website. So her website is Not Scared of Jet Lag. And we're going to have all this in the show notes. We probably might mention this again, but she
several
she
times we'll mention in the we mentioned it in the intro and the outro.
Yeah, and so she there's good information there, so definitely check that out if you want, like, you know, help planning just day trips or whatever. So
on the way back, where were we? So we got the food, Muhammad picked us up after lunch. Yeah. And then we drove back to Marrakesh, but on the way back we stopped at an argan factory where argan oils, soaps, food, all of this different kind of stuff are made, and it's all by hand. And argan.
Well, what is argan? Yeah.
Argan, if you're not familiar, is something that I've never heard of, and it primarily, I think it only grows on the western coast of Morocco and maybe a little bit south, but it is endemic to Morocco, and it is like an almond. So you have this nut with a shell, and then you take that nut out. They typically roast it for food products, and then they grind it down and they can make a nut butter out of it. They get oils from it, but there's just so many different products, and it's all done by hand.
Yeah. The texture of the nut butter, the argan nut butter, was very similar to almond butter, and it has an almost similar taste. You can tell you're not eating almond butter, but like, yeah, part of me was like, you know, that's where my brain went. Because it was like the closest thing to it.
I will say, I finished that within 3 days of bringing it
home. Oh, you already finished yours, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's done.
Nice. I bought face creams for some of my family members, my sisters, my mom. Like, they make the makeup out of it. And so that was another spot where we were able to experience that. Like, I helped them grind some of the nuts to make the nut butter. And they were so friendly and really very welcoming.
And then we make it back to Essaouira. And we make it back to Marrakesh.
Yeah.
And we are searching for our dinner options. Bob had something placed in the itinerary. We go find it. And takes us a little while.
Oh,
another
man.
Thing we should note. But before we get there, Bob, another thing note is when you're looking at addresses for different places within Medinas or in Morocco, most of the Google pins are completely wrong. And you should not necessarily follow them, but try to look at signage if you can once you get in the general vicinity. If you're looking for your Airbnb or your lodging, ask the people to give you a map of how to get there, because it is extremely confusing. There are very few street signs. It just weaves in and out. It's older and narrower than parts of Rome.
Yeah. It was very hard to get around, but we found this dinner spot and I think we almost gave up.
We did. We almost gave up.
We almost gave up in this dinner spot. So we ended up leaving the square, and the square is lively, to put it lightly. Snake charmers and people with monkeys, which ignore.
Ignore anybody with an animal.
Ignore them. Ignore them. Please, if you're listening to this, ignore them. Do not give them money. We do not like them abusing these animals, and you shouldn't either. So moving on, we leave the lively square and we end up going into these winding, maze-like, narrow streets of the Medina, and we're trying to find this restaurant and we just can't. And now there's no one in the streets. Like, it's just Elliot and I walking these narrow streets. Once in a while someone would pass us by, or a motorcycle or a moped would go by, but really there was no one there.
And I just happened to see the sign. I was like, oh, I think that's the name of the place. But I couldn't quite remember. I thought maybe it was just a similar name.
Uh-huh.
And so we got to the destination where I thought we were supposed to be going. And it was just like doors with nothing, no signage on anything. So I was like, all right, let's just go back the way we came to see if we can find that restaurant. And then it ended up being the right name. So we followed the signage to the restaurant. And I should note that every single restaurant, for the most part, is trying to bring you in. Yeah. Bob and I did not fit in. We were very clearly tourists visiting Marrakesh. And it is very apparent to restaurant owners that they want to bring you in, and they just kind of like yell at you saying, this is the best restaurant here. Mm-hmm. This place was the complete opposite. The door was shut when we got there. We actually had to knock. And
well, this big wooden door.
Yeah. And it was, there was no one in this alley for like 3 minutes. And so we knock, someone opens it, very, very well-mannered. And we get in there. It is a beautiful courtyard. There's a couple sitting already enjoying their meal. There's piano music playing. And the guy just tells us to explore and tour the building before coming back down for our meal. So we do the tour, we get back down. He washes our hands for us using like a little bowl and a teapot, and then gives us a towel. We sit down, and Bob and I didn't know what we were getting into.
No, it was amazing. And this place was so nice. And there was a fountain in the middle of this like courtyard structure with a roof, you know, views of the sky, views of the surrounding Medina. And we sit down, and it was like, it was so romantic. And Emily and I, we had no
like
idea.
Candlelight.
And so not only were we not under the impression we were going to have some, you know, romantic fine dining experience, because we just picked this place because they had good reviews. We didn't do it much further. But Elliot and I were dressed in shorts and sweaty t-shirts from walking around all day. By no means were we dressed for a fine dining experience. However, we get the menu, and then we're informed that it comes with a pre-dinner drink, a full bottle of wine, an aperitif, and then multiple courses. And so I think you went with a gin and tonic. I grabbed a bourbon and or a whiskey. And then we started to get our food. Two tiers of appetizers with tomato paste and eggplant. Four tiers.
Four.
Well, oh yeah, you're right. Four tiers.
It was four. Two of them for each meal.
So tomato paste and eggplant. We haven't even said the name of the restaurant yet, but we will.
No.
We'll drop it.
Yeah.
And so we get that appetizer with all of those, and then we ended up getting our entree. And I had the pigeon, it said. I heard a nicer way to put it is dove. In this batter with powdered sugar and cinnamon. Now, if you're thinking weird or even worse, like, ew, you're wrong. You're
very
so
wrong.
So
wrong. We actually ate that second. So Bob and I, when we dine, because we're trying all these new different foods, we ended up splitting everything. And I think we got the tangine.
Yes.
For the
you
other
ended up
dish.
Getting to, yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then I don't even remember what it's called, but like a pastilla?
Is that it? I think that's.
And it is delicious. So we specifically saved that for later because we were told it was going to be a little bit sweet. And we are so glad we did save it, because it was one of the best things we have ever had.
Yeah, it's pastilla. Pastilla. Yeah. So incredible. And then, you know, we're also drinking this bottle of wine. We have the most polite waiter, most accommodating waiter ever, coming back and forth, asking us if we're okay. The tea at the end, phenomenal. Like,
oh, I know.
We ended up having multiple glasses of that. And then,
so what we learned later was that this green tea is very common throughout all of Morocco. And you have to pour it from a very high height so it gets frothy. But we learned that there is a significant amount of sugar put into the tea to make it as good as it is. And the amount of sugar that goes into it would baffle you if you were to put that sugar in yourself. And you're like, this can't be how much.
So the only thing I would question with that is, like, we're talking about a population, and I'm talking about the United States here, that drinks multiple cans of Coca-Cola a day. Now, is it that much sugar? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they put a lot of sugar in there, but is it more than we have in our Western diet? I don't know.
I don't know, but I will say, this is a side tangent. Amanda and I actually, I saw on a Mountain Dew can that there's like 47 grams of sugar. Mm-hmm. And so we actually got a little bowl out and measured out 47 grams of sugar. And it is baffling how much it is. It's like disgusting how much sugar it is.
There was a meme, and it had like a can of Coke and the equivalent of donuts. And one of the comments was, I just learned that donuts are not going to have as much sugar as I thought they did.
That's crazy.
All right.
So then we have our little dessert, which before dessert even, we get like slices of oranges, right?
Yeah.
Not like wedges, but slices that have already been peeled and they've got honey drizzled on them and it's absolutely delicious. And then for dessert, we get this like cream-based thing with something, I don't know, it's like flaky. I don't even know what it is, Bob, but it was delicious. And that wasn't even the end of dessert. They brought out another four-tiered cookie tray.
Yeah. I have them up now on Google. They only have 145 reviews on Google. So let's pump those numbers up. The name of the restaurant is Sar. Esuasan. I mean, so it's KSARESSAOUSSAN. They are on some random little road in the Medina. Whew. Listen, not only is it very fairly priced, especially if you try to get dinner in the middle of the square, but the food is phenomenal. The atmosphere is incredible. You'll be off the beaten path. You'll have like such a great experience. So
we were there for over 3 hours.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
All right. We have to move on. We have a whole itinerary to get.
I know, but then we got back and we ended up hanging out with a few Americans and Gergu and Mattias again, right?
Right.
We met up with Jeff and Josh and hung out with Rada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shared a few bottles of wine, shared a few beers. It was a really cool experience. And it was great talking with them, and because they had already made their way through Morocco a little bit. At least Jeff and John did.
Support for the Traveler's Blueprint is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below the waist grooming champions of the world. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. Enjoy 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code TTB at manscaped.com.
Do not travel to the Netherlands or anywhere for that matter with untamed nether regions. Elliot and I do not, and we bring this with us on our trips. On the Traveler's Blueprint, we promote concise travel planning, and part of that planning is making sure you pack appropriately. The Lawnmower 4.0 is lightweight, has a travel lock, a light for close shaving, and a battery length that will last long into your trips.
You got it. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TTB at manscaped.com.
Your balls will thank you.
Yep. So, and then I guess that next morning is when we went to Merzouga. We had breakfast and then got on the road.
Yeah.
And man, that was a trip.
It was. So I think it took us 11 hours.
11 hours. And that's pretty normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's like, I think if we could have if we could have gone back,
I don't think we would have changed anything.
Well, I would have liked to spend more time out there. For how long it takes to get out there?
Yes.
I would have slept out in the desert maybe another night.
Yeah. No, so I agree with that.
That's something, maybe, you know, we did one night, and we're going to get to it in a minute. We're going to get to our experience. But because of how far, like, I don't want people to underestimate how far Marrakech is from Merzouga. It's an entire day of travel when everything's said and done. By the time you wake up and eat and...
Did Muhammad say? It's about 400 or 500 kilometers.
Did he?
Which is about 300 miles. So I mean, if you think about the length of Pennsylvania from east coast to west coast, yeah, that's pretty long. But the roads are vastly different.
Yeah,
you're going through the Atlas Mountains, not the Appalachians.
And they don't have a turnpike either. They don't have a nice straight flat highway like what Pennsylvania has. So it's
11 hours is pretty normal, and that includes a stop at Ait Benedu, which is a Kaspa.
Yes.
Old Wall. That was used as a filming location for several movies, including Gladiator.
I watched Gladiator yesterday.
You
could see it. Yeah, dude. It was like trending on Netflix, and it was like number three, so I clicked it. And when he's first captured and then starts training as a trainee gladiator before they make it to Rome, that's where they were. And so you saw the area that they – like he did some of his first fights as like a slave. And you could see the village, the Berber village behind him. And there were a few shots. I actually took a picture and I meant to text it to you. But like you could see it. You could see the Berber villages behind him. And I was like, I was just there. And you know how many times – I've seen that movie at least 5 times. And
now it means
to actually now see the scenery and say I was there, I stood there. So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
And part of Game of Thrones was filmed there as well. And mm-hmm. that's when Daenerys was freed the people.
I believe it's when she is making her way and she like ends up in the one city where the guy like says, trade me a dragon for the Unsullied, and she ends up using the dragon. Spoiler alert, to light him on fire, and she just takes the army and then leaves. So yeah, I mean that's been out for a while, right? If you're gonna watch it, you probably already have.
Yeah. So that was like an hour and a half detour, 2 hours, because we got lunch there as well, and it was totally worth it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, like you have to go see that. You have to stop there. If you're going to make your way out to Merzuga. And it breaks up the trip. It makes it much easier. Mm-hmm. You don't want to drive 11 hours straight through. So, and that's part of the reason you should plan for an entire day. An entire day to Merzuga and an entire day out. Make that part of your itinerary.
Yep.
So.
We get to Merzuga late at night. And then we actually meet up with Eva and Hassan for dinner and have more tangine. And this time we had chicken and goat, I believe. And they are very different. Like the seasonings used for each one is different. So while many of the ingredients are the same for the core of it, the spices are different.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, so this is where we got to meet Eva in person. We got to meet her boyfriend, Hassan. He's a funny dude. Eva was great. And like, this is where we sat down. We finally got out to the desert. And to put it in your heads where it is geographically, like Merzuga is right on the edge of the Sahara. It's the last village. I mean, I don't want to say the last village, maybe there's some others, but like it's right at the edge of the Sahara Desert, and so it's a really great base camp to make your way out to the desert for day excursions or to sleep out in various like oases
in
the desert. Oases. So yeah, we had a very welcoming introductory dinner.
Did a lot of our planning.
Planned out the week, and I mean Eva had it all planned out. She just spit out the whole trip for us, and right then and there, and we knew exactly what we were getting ourselves into, and it was great. So we had that meal, and then we went back and we just crashed.
Yeah. We were getting up early to go ETV riding.
Yeah.
On sand dunes.
The next day, we wake up and we grab ATVs. Eva had them come show up right at the place, right where we were staying. They rolled up with 3 ATVs, one for Elliot, one for myself, and then one for the guides. That 2 guides shared one. And we hit the dunes. We followed them out to the dunes. And I don't know if you've never been in sand dunes on an ATV. I don't know how many people have.
It's incredible.
It's incredible. I'm not a big speed guy. Like my nerves were going, my adrenaline was pumping.
Which was completely new to me, because you were the one that wanted to do the ATV riding in Peru too.
Yeah, different environment. It was the sand, like something about like the ground not being.
Ground kind of being liquid.
Yeah. Like it was, because you're seeing it fall out from either side of you. And we would be on the ridgeline of a dune. Like the physics behind it, I think I didn't quite grasp. And so as I'm riding it, am I just going to sink into the sand? Like what's going on here? So we went up and down and we went sideways. Like we were in a bowl, you know, a giant sand dune bowl, and we're like almost completely sideways. And then they take us up to this giant sand dune. And because of my muscle mass.
That's definitely it.
I couldn't make it to the top. I was too heavy. My ATV started to sink into the sand a little bit.
The two people on an ATV made it up.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about good old American muscle mass right here. So, I mean, I don't know what it was. If I was too heavy.
Operator error.
I think it was operator error, too. I think that's what it was.
Because you got stuck twice.
I got stuck twice. But he couldn't get me up either. He tried to do it. He tried to get us. He jumped on my ATV and tried to go up, and we got stuck. And then he just went sideways. Remember? So maybe it was the ATV. I think it was the ATV, actually. So
I think you need more momentum. But yeah. It was awesome. And on the way back, we actually did stop at a little oasis that was no longer used. And we ate our date right off a tree, which yeah. was awesome.
Yeah.
They showed us where the water is from the oases. And it's just like a few feet below the surface of the sand, which is crazy to me. Like there's so much water underneath that sand.
Yeah, it was like 2 or 3 feet. Yeah, 2 or 3 feet.
And so, in the past, those oases did have little pools of water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's been so used.
And just to define what an oasis is, it's just essentially like date trees and just a few shrubs. And it's a place where vegetation sits right at the base of dunes. Like they seem to be surrounding giant sand dunes, maybe where there's a little bit more shade.
I think it's literally just where a plant was established and then the sand did not just start building up.
Interesting. Yeah. So they it was pretty cool to see the vegetation there. We kind of explored that a little bit, then hopped back on them. We also saw the giant rally car riding.
Oh yeah,
through.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Super loud, super obnoxious.
So loud.
Kind of cool to watch. I personally wouldn't go in one. It's not my
Yeah. I mean I do kinda wanna drive one.
Oh, you're crazy. Yeah.
But on the way back, do you remember I think you missed it, but there was a little hole and there was a fox in it.
Yeah,
a fennec fox.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it go into the hole and we actually did a circle around it. And it was, I guess, extremely rare for us to have seen that because they seem to have all moved out of the desert and into more secluded spots because of how, I mean, not now, but 2 years ago when it was peak tourism, there were just people all over the dunes, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it just pushed the foxes away. And yeah. again, you can see them. Some kids will have them on leashes because they will wait outside the little den and then grab the fox when it comes out and then put it on a leash and ask you for money to take a picture of it. Do not take a picture of it, please.
No. Yeah.
Ignore them every time.
General rule of thumb for travel, if you see somebody with an animal that should be wild, don't. Pay attention to them. Just ignore them at a minimum, or just tell them that you don't like it, and maybe it'll help. You know, get the ball rolling for them, and maybe they'll realize that they should find another niche. You know, so the ATV experience was awesome, really cool. Like just because I think it was so unique, even though my nerves were pumping, and I should say, like I'm not a speed guy, I'm not a snowboarder or a skier or like a motorcycle guy. So if you enjoy any of those things, that you'll probably take to it a little bit more than I did. But I'm more of like a slow, like I like to hike and kind of do things at a different pace. So depending on where your own threshold is for that stuff, you may love it or hate it. But it was an incredible experience.
Yeah. And some absolutely stunning views, both of Merzuga and then
yeah.
Merzuga is right on, it's 20 kilometers away from the border of Algeria. And right. you can see the plateau where the border starts.
Yeah, yeah. Even more than seeing the view of Merzuga, I think what I liked was looking out at the sand dunes. When you're
it was
on
just
the top,
so incredible.
The sand dune, and all you can see is just a sea of wavy sand. It was so fascinating. It is quite literally such a foreign environment to me that I was blown away seeing it in person for the first time. You can see mountains in so many locations. You can see the oceans and rainforests. But to see the desert, there's only a few places in the world that you can really get to experience that. And Morocco is one of them. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's continue. So
yeah. Well, I think after that, it was a very packed day. So I think we finish up with the ATVs, we get our stuff together, and then I think we end up going to meet Eva mm-hmm. at in Merzuga, like the town street, and then we went to a pool and took a dip in the desert, which was awesome. We had the pool entirely to ourselves.
Yeah.
We got some lunch there with some fresh squeezed orange juice.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one thing I loved, like, their dessert is fruit.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to have this nice full dinner. And then at the end of it, just indulge in really sweet, good fruit. I really enjoy that more than the cakes and stuff that you typically get here for dessert. So.
And after the pool, we head back to town. And then in town, we get our turbans.
Yeah.
For our hike.
I love that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. They're awesome. Like,
yeah.
I did not realize how practical they were.
Right. Comfortable, great, practical. Right.
Yeah. Great sun protection, mm-hmm. great sand protection.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had them over our faces. It was great for, yeah, not getting sunburned. And they're cool too. They're very good with mm-hmm. the heat being allowed to move through them. So it wasn't overbearing. Like, you think you're in the desert and you have this thing covering your face and your head that you might be too hot. But because it's such a dry heat, they work really well. Yeah. I loved it. I loved having that thing on.
That dry heat
is... I might mow my lawn with it on.
Yeah, that dry heat is extremely manageable. When we were ATVing, I think you were wearing shorts and a t-shirt. I was wearing long sleeves and pants, and I was not sweating at all in 95 degree weather.
Right.
It's just so dry. When you have that sun not hitting your skin, you're not getting burnt and you're not overheating. There's enough wind to keep you comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we grab the turbans for our hike. So we then start to, did we eat? I don't remember if we ate.
No.
I think.
No.
No. So then
we get, we get the camels and then we start hiking out to the oasis.
Yeah. Yeah. During sunset.
Yeah.
So my first time with a camel, how about yours?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, you had to think about it. So we meet up with Hassan and Syed. So Syed is Hassan's brother. And we end up walking out with the camels through the desert. We walk with them for a while. We're getting tons of pictures and we're learning to hike on the sand dunes. Now, instead of...
It is an art. A
pro tip here. One, you don't walk up the side of the dune. You find the ridgeline and you walk up the ridgeline.
Yes.
So learn that.
Other tip is to find the areas that are harder, because it's like walking on a hard surface. If there's sand that is loose, it'll be like walking through snow.
Right. Yeah. Lots of sand in our shoes. We ended up walking to the top of this sand dune to watch the sun finally set. It was gorgeous. One of the most gorgeous skies. We had some clouds, but it kind of added to the effect, I think, a little bit.
Definitely did.
Hung out with the camels, and then we rode them for a little bit.
And that was really interesting. Yeah, I actually liked it. I don't think you liked it as much as I did.
No. So I think I just like my own 2 feet, but it was they're
they are incredible beings. I mean, because they're packed, or when I say packed, I mean they typically carry stuff. So not only are they carrying like 50 pounds of stuff, but they're also carrying a person. And going on this crazy terrain and this like constantly changing surface. Mm-hmm. It's really impressive.
And you go up the dunes, down the dunes. And yeah, I mean, I think I could have gotten used to it for sure. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like I was really.
It's different than horseback riding. Have you done that?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't.
It's similar, but still different.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. So we ended up riding them really for a little high. Bit. Jumping off, and we finished our hike and we ended up in this oasis where we
intentionally ended up there.
Yes. Yeah. For the night, Eva had us all set up with our own, I guess you can call it a tent like structure, right? Like some sort of, so it's like a tent like structure of some kind. Yeah.
And then while we get there, I think Hassan and Syed are prepping dinner. We have some tea and cookies. And we're just sitting under the stars. There is no light anywhere nearby.
These moments, like when we were laying down, I think there were points where you and Eva were just talking and I was just just infatuated with the night sky. We saw satellites go by. We saw the International Space Station go by. We saw my first not only my first shooting star experience, which there were multiple, but apparently one of them that you said was like one of the biggest ones you've ever seen. So the night sky alone, like that night doing that was so cool. Like it was just as unique as being in the desert itself, seeing the desert, seeing the night sky in the desert. Also, like just fascinating, incredible, like beautiful, beyond most of the things that I've experienced as a traveler.
Yeah, I mean, very distinctly the Milky Way.
Yes, this planets, right? So
well, yeah, we saw visible. Jupiter, Saturn, Venus and Venus
visible. Yeah,
it was so cool. So a big shout out. I don't think it was part of her book, but I mean, if it's not, episode 76 with Valerie, the dark mm-hmm. skies,
yeah,
and where to find them.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah. So, and then on Moroccan time. Hassan and Syed come out with this chicken barbecue dinner, which hats off to the chef. Hassan and Syed, if you guys are listening to this, such a great dinner. Thank you for that dinner. It was really tender, flavorful chicken with a bunch of vegetables. Couscous. Was there couscous actually underneath of everything? I don't remember if there was.
There
was egg and there were all these different vegetables. It was rice. It was rice. Yes.
Yeah. Olives, bread. Yeah. Absolutely. Like to have that meal prepared in the desert.
I wasn't expecting it.
No, I was expecting like
a normal
hiking food.
Right. Just like thrown together. Yeah. Like chicken. Yeah.
And
like
the plan that you'd have. The presentation of it was stunning.
Oh yeah, the way he cut the eggs. Did you see like the little triangles like that he cut in the eggs? Like they put so much effort into the presentation of this meal. It was phenomenal. And after a long day of ATVing, swimming at a pool, hiking in the desert, and then finally ending it with this incredible meal, good conversation with the three of them. It was such a beautiful day from start to finish. Such a great meal. Such a great way to end the evening. And by the time I hit that bed, I was out cold. I was so exhausted and really comfortable. So like sleeping in the oasis, and it wasn't like it was I'm trying to describe this structure. Like it's so hard, but.
Well, you got a picture of it, right? It wasn't even – it is kind of like a tent, but it's got like wooden – framing, but then it's all like blankets, tapestry and
like
blankets and carpets are mm-hmm. that protect you from the sand.
Yeah, the perfect structure for the occasion for sure.
Yeah, and so, we were the only two sleeping inside.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and
everyone else was sleeping in the oasis. Yeah. Well, I mean, the other three people and the fourth person that showed up.
Stars. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The owner of the oasis or that section of the campsite came.
He was sleeping outside of the actual.
Yeah, oasis, and then the next morning, mm-hmm. I had the bright idea of waking up early to see the sun rise over Algeria.
Yeah, I don't know why I followed you up.
Totally worth it.
It was. It ended up being worth it, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to see the sunset and the sunrise in 12
You picked
hours.
A massive sand dune. How many feet was that? Like, what do you think
that had to have been like? That had to have been like at least 1,200 feet.
So I make it up. So one, Elliot broke cardinal rule number one and went up the side of it. And me, blindly, half asleep, groggy-eyed, just followed him up. Like, you're supposed to, if you were listening, walk up the ridgeline. We walked up just straight up like a couple
so
of
hard.
Dummies. So with sandboard, or with snowboards, with the intention to sandboard down, I make it up maybe a quarter of the way. You make it up what? Like, did you even make it up halfway, maybe?
I think barely halfway.
So
and my heart is pounding.
As soon as I had a good view of the horizon of the Algerian mountains, I stopped because I was like, okay, I can see the sunrise really well from here. I'm good. Elliot kept going. He stopped shortly after, which as soon as I saw him stop, I knew it was hard because Elliot likes to finish those types of feats. Like if it's a physical challenge, if it's a walk, he likes to make it to the end. When
you're
I
right,
saw
I
you
do.
Stop, dude, I was like, okay, all right. He's exhausted. He's tired. So.
Dude, my quads were burning. My heart was pounding.
So we stopped, watched one of the most amazing sunrises I've ever experienced in my life. And then I sat on my board to go down. You actually tried to sandboard down.
Yeah, and I'm not a snowboarder, and I think I fell as soon as I passed you.
You did.
When I came and I fell purposefully to sit next to you. And then I went back down again. And yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I did pick the steepest sand dune to go down. Yeah. Like, I had my hand fully submerged in the sand to slow me down. And I was still
easy
flying.
To stop, too. Like, in the sand, it was easier to sandboard than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. Well, when you pick the right slope.
Yeah, right. I'm sure it probably could have gotten more complicated. So we do that. And then we go back down. And again, they had this incredible breakfast for us prepared with. How would you describe the eggs that we've had in Morocco? Now, we had them multiple times. The egg dish. Yeah.
Oh, I was trying to describe it to Amanda. I'm not good.
So like, it was like this tomato paste. Right?
Yeah, like a almost sun-dried tomato flavor.
With parsley. And then was there maybe a little cilantro in there maybe? And then with like the like.
It's just like a sunny side up egg.
Sunny side up eggs inside.
Yeah.
And it was how they did it. We had it multiple times. So it seems mm-hmm. to be like a common Moroccan way of serving eggs. We had that.
It's very good.
With bread, of course, with fig.
Fig jam.
Sorry, date. We had the date jam. Or was it fig jam? Date?
Fig jam. Fig jam.
Fig jam. And then the fig oil with olive oil.
Olive oil.
No, and we had the fig oil too. We had the
fig oil?
Yeah. Yeah, or it was like the, not balsamic, like it was a glazy, yeah, yeah.
Date, look at the pictures. Date syrup.
The date syrup, yes, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yes.
So we had that, incredible. The olive oil, I really liked in Morocco because like you could always taste the olives in it.
Yeah, it was way more olivey.
Very olivey, which I really enjoyed.
All of it.
Yeah, I love it. So.
Had to.
Pack the calories there. Then we grab some pictures of the camels for the Sun for your local newspaper so we could be on the cover of it. If you live in central Pennsylvania, Dauphin County, where? Lebanon
yep.
County?
Or Dauphin Lebanon? County, yeah.
Dauphin County. Check it out because, yeah, maybe we'll be on the cover. And then we went sandboarding, right?
Yeah, more sandboarding.
Yeah. And
much more manageable this time because we didn't pick the steepest and tallest dune in the freaking desert.
Yeah, I think I got one of the coolest pictures ever of me. Like, I don't know.
It is pretty awesome. Who took that photo?
Because I don't do these action-y things. Like I said, I don't sandboard, snowboard. I'm not a big like action guy. This is one of the only pictures I've ever have where I'm like in an action type moment. Like, I don't surf or or do any of those cool things that people do. So.
Oh, it's such an awesome photo.
That's one of the only pictures I think I have where I'm in this like action shot, like during the moment. So,
it's great.
It. Yeah, and that was cool. That was really cool, and we did that for a little bit, and then we hiked out. Which now this is like my speed. This is the type of thing I love, like hiking, because it's slow and you're absorbing the environment as you go through it. And we made it through the dunes.
It's just an interesting way to describe it. Absorbing the environment.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel like that's what I was going for. Like a sponge, like a mental sponge. Like you're feeling the environment. You're seeing it. You're using so many senses, and you're forced to take it in slower, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we hike through the dunes, and we hit like the Black Rock Desert.
Yes.
With the
which is a majority of. The Moroccan desert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the sand dune desert is actually like well defined. And then the Black Rock Desert is what primarily separates the sand dune desert in Morocco from Algeria and the plateau and more Black Rock Desert.
Right, right. The intention was to find or hopefully find nomadic tribes or nomadic people that.
For tea.
And yep. And we did ended up. So we ended up walking through.
Hmm? Long walk. What do we hike for? Like 3 hours?
I think it was 4 hours. And it was hot. And mm-hmm. it was cool. Like the black rocks, as you're walking through, you start to notice that there are...
Fossils.
Like fossil-like features on them. I mean, there are curves and, you know, these coral designs on the rocks. And at first we're walking through and I'm picking them up, finding them fascinating, like you know, it's some unique find. And then the longer you're walking, you start to realize that these things are everywhere, littered are fossils. Like Sorry, my voice is.
Yeah, what are you doing there?
I'm going a little dry from blabbing so much, talking so much. Let me get a drink of water. So,
but to what Bob was saying, like when we first got to the Black Rock Desert, we saw these fossils, and you can buy these in different shops for a few dirham. And we're like, oh, these are so special. And then we continue walking for another 2 hours through this desert, and these rocks are just everywhere. Yeah. So I have to confirm this, but I'm pretty sure that section of Morocco and the Sahara was an ancient sea, which is why there was coral.
So I previously have read, I'm talking like maybe a year, like I don't even remember when I read this, but they've found whale bones in the Sahara Desert with it, just like in the middle of the Sahara Desert, whale bones. It was an ocean. I know that. Right. From reading historic. Yeah. So, yeah, it was at one point in time.
But I mean, you can look at, you can see the plateau of Algeria, and it all drains into that section of the Black Rock Desert in Morocco. Mm. Yeah. It's a significant elevation change. So I don't know. Yeah. That's where I don't know where the boundaries of the ancient sea was.
Right.
But cool. Yeah, we just keep walking through and get to this nomadic village where we have more tea and what's called Berber pizza. And it's the Moroccan bread stuffed with cooked veggies, spices, sometimes meat. This one didn't have any. It was just like carrots, some zucchini. It was just so delicious, so refreshing after hiking for 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved that part of our trip. So finally getting there, getting refreshed with the tea, eating that Moroccan pizza, meeting that woman who lived there. And then, like, you know, we're in this little hut. It's all wood, straw, in the middle of the desert, super dry. And then I see a little light switch
on the wall. Yeah.
And she has a little LED light with a little solar panel on the roof. I thought it was, like, such a cool little hint of
juxtaposition.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Word of the day.
Yeah. So then instead of walking back, we thankfully had Muhammad pick us up.
Yes. He met us there. And then we went to the mines, old mine, old French mine for coal, and spent some time there. And then took the car over to another village and did some Ganawa, which is music.
Yeah.
Live music.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Yeah. So we hung out there for a little bit, had tea there. Had them play music, sat down, relaxed. Then where did we go? Then
from there we went to lunch.
Yes. Okay. Right. Okay. I'm drawing a blank on where we went for lunch.
I don't remember the name. It was like Cafe. Yeah. Cafe
and we had
Nona.
The more pizza. And we had more pizza. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where the little kitten was. There was like a little like this. Tiniest little kitten.
Really, really enjoyed hanging out with us.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think they could tell that you had cats. Have cats.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, that was super cool. And then we went back to Merzouga.
Yep.
Eva showed us the garden.
Yep. Freshened up. And then...
Freshened up. Showed us the garden. We walked the town a little bit. Did some souvenir shopping.
Yep.
For our family. And
then went to... Is it... I think it was Hassan's sister-in-law.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Aisha.
One of the cooler experiences of the trip as well.
Like,
Cool. I loved that they were so kind to let us into their home, cooked for us, and like, yeah, just had, I loved talking with Saeed this night, just hearing his experiences as a kid, like in the dunes. That conversation that night was really special. Having that dinner, eating the meal together. Like, there's something about the way the culture is, to where everybody kind of shares one central dish, and you have your own spoon, and sometimes you eat with your hands, and you share one large plate together, and it forces you to be close together. There's something that, you know, it increases the intimacy of the conversation and the experience, and you really feel more connected with the people rather than sitting at like a giant table where everybody has their own meal. I really enjoyed that. We were sitting on the floor. It was so cool.
This is coming from you is big, because you're not one that likes to share your food.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know. One in Rome. I didn't feel that was just something that I said multiple times throughout the trip that annoyed the hell out of Elliot. So
yeah, I feel like you said it more in Morocco than you did in Rome.
Yeah, maybe. Once I found out it annoyed you, I made sure to bring it up anytime it was applicable. So, so we had that meal, great night, tea. Oh, the fruit, the bananas that they served at the
end. Delicious.
Yeah, I had two bananas, like a ton of pomegranate, an apple. I ate more fruit in that sitting. So that was awesome.
And then that was it.
And then we crashed. Yeah, we went back and we went right to sleep.
And we're getting up early to drive back, another long car ride.
Yeah.
And I think that one, we left at 7 in the morning, and I think we got back at 8. That was a 13-hour trip.
Oof, yeah. And so we stopped at the Gorge on this trip.
We did.
Do you remember the name of the gorge by any chance?
Oof. I do know where it was. I don't know. I'm not going to remember how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to know how to pronounce it, period. But it's Tinger. That can't be right.
No, that's definitely not right, dude.
It's Tinghir.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful. It's just this, again, this juxtaposition of this incredibly arid mountainside with this river that flows through it. And then it's just all greenery at the bottom of this river or at the bottom of this gorge with palm trees and date trees and gardens for farming. And then you get up, you follow the river up through the mountain, and it just cuts through this rock. And it is just amazing to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved that. In addition to that, we stopped and there were these overlooks where you could see the lowest point of the valley, and it was just lush. It was green with date trees and different types of vegetation. And as you moved up the mountainside, you'd see the village, and then you'd see the dry, you know, bone dry mountain, which I'm assured, you know, at certain rainy events or the winter months, it gets snow, and that's what feeds those low points. But seeing it the way we saw it, driving through it, and you get to see the Andes, like this drive, although 11, I'm sorry, the Andes, the Atlas Mountains. So although these drives are 11 and 13 hours, one thing that I think is important, and this is like for any travel experience ever, remember that this is part of the travel experience.
Is the journey.
Everything. The second you leave your house, you're now traveling. So enjoy all the moments and find a special moments within those travel experiences. So even through the 13-hour drive, you're traveling, you're experiencing something new, you're seeing something new, you're having conversations with new people. Like, that's part of it. So make sure that you reflect, like you find meaning in those as well. So the drive was incredible, and although long, worth it. We also stopped at the
Wazazet.
Is that the name of the movie place? The
film. Well, Wazazet is the town, and then the movie place is
Moroccan Hollywood. Is
it's Moroccan Hollywood? It. Yeah. Where is that tour? We went up past it. Is that it? Ah, shit. Yeah, but it is. A lot of movies were filmed there.
Yeah.
Cinema Studio Atlas.
We did that. And then and we make it back. We have our night back in Marrakesh.
One of the other things that is absolutely fascinating to me is there is a centralized solar, concentrated solar panel facility and traditional solar right outside of Wazazet that's fairly new. And there's a phenomenon that we're still trying to figure out how it happens. But it's the mirrors that are supposed to concentrate on this central tower and create heat that generates steam that creates electricity. But there's something that happens where there's just a really bright spot just off center of the tower. And we have no idea what causes it.
Have you tried to Google it and figure it out and you can't?
I Googled it a little bit, but not in depth. I feel like I could spend an entire day trying to find it. But I feel like I just need an expert.
Listen, if you're solar panel or solar,
if you are familiar with mirror physics and light,
okay,
reach out to us.
Reach out to us. Yeah.
Yeah. So from Wazazet, we continue, and this is actually where it was a bit of a bummer in retrospect. Alice Morrison was in Wazazet helping with the Marathon du Sable. And we found out afterwards when we passed through, when we got back to Marrakesh, we were going back and forth via text message, and she told her that we were there. She ended up being there, and we could have stopped and seen her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just missed her. So we'll have to go back sometime still.
Yeah. Yeah. So we make it back to Marrakesh, and then we have our night there in the square. So the square is very much can be overwhelming depending on where you walk within it. So a lot of people within the square are targeting tourists to spend their money, rightfully so, right? But they can be aggressive in how they approach you, and they really don't take no for an answer. Ooh, Elliot, do you remember my trick though? So as you're walking the markets, or as you're walking through the area where they're like dining, like the I guess it's the market area, every single table is ran by a different individual, and they will hound you. Come on, come and eat. They're in your face. And once they learn what country you're from, they'll try to like say any saying that they can related to your country. Like, remember that? So,
oh yeah.
And so eventually though, I learned to say like, oh, I'm sorry, I just ate. And for whatever reason, like that worked. As soon as they said that to them, they would walk
away. You're full. You're full.
I'm full.
Yeah.
I'm full. I just ate. I'm full. And they would leave you alone. And if you said no though, or like, you know, you weren't ready or something,
anything
they would
else,
continue
yeah.
to follow you. So maybe try that. But it was definitely an experience. We ended up eating there and
we're just for the experience
for a meal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think again, like going back to the meal that Elliot and I just raved about, like there's and the place that we had our first dinner. If it were me going back one night, maybe experiencing it, one night is absolutely enough. If you don't experience it, I wouldn't say you're missing out on too much. The restaurants surrounding the square and in Marrakech are really good. So there's so many way, way, way better food options. So
way better.
Consider that and definitely. And then the shops are cool. Like, it's a lot of the same stuff, a lot of stuff geared specifically for tourists, like jerseys and trinkets and
until you
things
get
like
to the
that,
souk.
Dresses. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the souk was very different.
Fascinating in the souk.
Yeah.
But we did that the following day with the tour guide, so we'll get
yes.
to that in a minute. But so that was our night out. We just kind of walked around, experienced that a little bit, and then went to bed.
And if you're a fan of sweets, the one thing that we really enjoyed was they have these nut bars. Some of them are nougat. Some of them are pistachio. They have a few different flavors. I think we got one nougat almond and one pistachio.
Yeah.
And those to me are amazing. Like I like chocolate, but this is my dessert that I would prefer.
Yeah, they're phenomenal. They're really good. So you can definitely get food. I don't think you need to eat in the market. That's my personal travel recommendation.
Nope.
I don't think you need to eat there at night. You can walk through it to see it, but
that's all you need.
Go to a better place. Yeah. So, all right. Then the next day we wake up, we have our morning tour with
I will
Alice.
Say I did sleep on a roof.
Oh, you slept on the roof that night. You did.
Yeah. Which was very enjoyable. I mean, we were the only ones in the Airbnb.
Yeah. We had this entire apartment building to ourselves.
Yeah. So I took a blanket up and a pillow and I slept under the stars on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome.
Yep. Yep. And then we woke up, we met Eva and Hassan for breakfast, and Hassan went on his ways, and we met with Hassan's cousin,
yep,
who ran the tour, took us to mosques. We got really good insight on the history of the mosques, history of Morocco, history of the architecture. Really cool. I think the highlights of this were the Bahia Palace. Right. And the Saidian tombs, which you say those are the two. And then of course the souks, but go, you know, Mr. Architect here, why don't you give us some of your insight on this, the tombs and the palace?
I mean, they're pretty incredible. I mean, there's a lot of old Islamic influenced architecture. France, these cities are very, very old. I don't think France or Portugal really impacted the design here. Ketubia, it's all Islamic and Berber influence. So we went to a garden complex which had exotic plants, but then it was, again, it was traditional Islamic design from taken from the Middle East. And the mosques, which are the minarets, they have these massive towers. And I think it's Ketubia. That's the big one in Marrakesh. That's right outside Jemaa al-Fna, which is the big square in the Medina. And it's all just so different than European architecture, but still very impressive. And Bahia Palace, that's one of those cool ones that you're going through, and the, I guess, the detail and the elaborateness keep getting better and better as you go through each room.
Yeah. 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 I the optical illusions too, right? Associated with the way the tiles were situated. And if you looked at it from a certain angle compared to, or like squinted your eyes a little bit, it would change. Like you would see different shapes, and it was such, so cool. Like just really, really unique. I thought that was so much fun.
Very cool. Yeah. And Morocco is known for its tile, but most of that tile making occurs in northern Morocco, I think in Fez.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the souk, we walked around that, and what we didn't know, we thought we were in the souk at the first part of our trip when we were in the market, but the market we were in was primarily for tourists, but the souk is very different, and there are designated sections for like leather or clothing or carpets or pottery, and you can walk through, and it's all of these people that make it there and sell it there.
Yeah.
So there was one section that we saw these gorgeous lamps. There were shoes. What else was there? There was metalworking.
The leather, the tan, like they were tanning leather and forming the bags. Yeah, that I loved that. I thought that was so cool to see how they were actually making some of the products that we saw being sold elsewhere. So highly recommend going there. The tour that we did, like I would recommend that because it was perfect for us and what we needed. It was a half a day. We saw the palace, we got the tombs, and we saw some of the manufacturing. I loved it. It was like this perfect little introduction to some of the highlights of Marrakesh beyond the main square, you know? And so that's, I really like that. And we're going to tell you how you can do it too in a minute, but so that was it, right? We had our last meal. And then we hit the road. We went to Paris. I think for time reasons, do we want to get into too much detail with Paris?
No, Paris, so, we just mostly walked around, got more food. We did meet up with Liz. Yeah, we met up with Liz Warner. And her episode was the 30 marathons in 30 countries. Yeah. That's episode 147. And that was great catching up with her because we had a great conversation. She's actually going to do a 100 miler in Croatia. Coming up, so that's going to be pretty incredible. And then I actually got to reconnect with an old high school friend that I hadn't seen in several years, and that was it was nice. And then we
walked around, we went outside the Louvre, we did most of it was just walking around. We went to the Arc de Triomphe. The one place that I think we have to give a shout out to was Odette. So hell, Odette is a pastry place. So it's called Odette Notre Dame, I believe. It's a pastry place near Shakespeare and Company, which is a bookstore, also near Notre Dame, like kind of in that same area.
Yeah.
Whew, these little cream puffs, they have multiple flavors.
Oh my God, they're so good.
Now, I just raved about the macaroon. It was like, I don't even know if I had to compare the two.
I like the cream puff pastry way better.
Way better. Wow.
I mean, macarons have their place, but this cream puff pastry, man, I don't know.
Like, because not only was the flavor like so good, but like the texture of it, the way you, like, because it was you didn't realize how soft the crust or whatever, like the actual pastry crust. So it was hard, and then like you'd hold it and it would feel firm, and then you'd put it in your mouth and like you'd eat it and it would just like explode with whatever flavor cream you had.
And there was like a little flower of flavored fondant on top. So good. With a little bit of an espresso. Wow.
So that's one place that we have to say, like, have to recommend. Other than that, like, yeah, we didn't do too much other than just walking around and seeing the sights from the exterior. We didn't go into any churches or any museums. Mm-hmm. We just kind of kept it to a walking tour.
Kept it outside, yeah. So there are two things that I want to mention that we haven't talked about in terms of technicality. But Eva of Berber Adventure Tours keyed us into this because Bob and I have traveled together a few times and we are separate individuals, so we pay for things differently. But we were trying to keep track of all of our expenses via just like the notes app on our phone. But Splitwise seems to be an incredibly effective way. If you're traveling with one other person even, or multiple, it makes it super easy to track who owes who, and you can just tally up everything as you're going through. And then at the end of it, it'll say, Bob owes Brian $20 and then Elliot owes Brian $10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to use it.
So easy. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing, my friend Maggie, who has been living in Paris for the last 3 years, in France for the last 10, shared with me this app, and some of you travelers may know it. And I think it's called Space Invaders. And, hold on.
This is where they had the invaders painted on buildings throughout the city. And I think at one point we mentioned, like, why are there these Space Invader type characters? And if you don't know Space Invaders, it's like a super old video game, like one of the original video games way before both Elliot and my time. It's the one that you have the alien Space Invader on the top and he's shooting the little dots down and you need to, you know, move back and forth. It's a very basic old game, but.
Yeah, so the intent here is that cities all over the world will have these spray painted space invaders or other like pixelated icons on the side of buildings or walls. And you turn on your GPS location on your phone, you take a picture of it, and you get points. And you can like collect all of these space invaders in whichever city you happen to live in or travel to. And I think Paris had like over 1,400. And obviously smaller cities will have less, bigger cities will have more, but they're everywhere. And you start to notice them and it just makes travel even just a little bit more fun.
Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool thing. All right, that's our trip. And I want to mention that we could not have done this without Eva, Hassan, Syed, and Muhammad. Now, Eva's the contact person here. And she runs Berber Adventure Tours. Now, although, you know, we're promoting her company, we're not doing it because we were paid to do it, you know, or we were pushed to do it. We worked with her because we trusted her and we knew she was going to provide us with a good experience. And she did. So
a great experience.
This recommendation is not coming because, you know, we're doing it for any financial reason. We're doing it because we truly believe in her and her company. And so the links to her her websites and her social media are going to be in the show notes here. And we're going to tag her in the post that we post for this. But listen, if you want a seamless experience, if you want to go to Morocco, and Morocco is by no means like a super easy country to visit. Like to go from Marrakech to Merzouga and see Essaouira and know what to do and how to do it and who to book for the ATVs and who to book for the desert experience, the camels to go into the desert and spend time in an oasis. Like that, you
need someone.
You could probably do it on your own if you wanted to spend a significant amount of time.
If you wanted to learn Berber,
companies. Right? Like it's really hard to do. There are certain countries where it's just hard to do. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. And if you want to just tell Eva what you want to do, how much time you have, how much money you want to spend, and when you want to go, she'll just plan it for you. Like that's what she did with us. As soon as we had her, I met her through a Morocco Facebook group because I was trying to plan our own trip. I was asking questions. She responded. And I could tell by her answer that she knew what she was talking about and that she was going to be very helpful. From there, not only did we get into a Facebook messaging conversation where she was helping me, but she came on the podcast because she was so helpful. So she's the real deal. Like, so I really want to put, yeah. And think about it. You know, if you're going to Morocco,
She'll make your trip very easy and comfortable. Like you don't have to think about it. We didn't have to think about it. She helped us through almost every part of it.
From the ATVs to Muhammad, our driver, from the meals that we had, from the time we spent in the Oasis, we didn't do any of it. I just talked with her and I either said, yes, we want to do that. No, we don't want to do that. And then we just confirmed the cost of the trip before we went. And then we showed up and we had Hassan pick us up. We met her and we just went with it. And it was so nice to wake up and have these days planned for us without issue. Everything was, we already knew, like, you know, generally what we were going to do. It was incredible. And so really
nice, peace of mind.
Yes. Peace of mind. And seamless. Enjoy the trip. That's my favorite word, because for me, I like to know I'm going to have a seamless experience. You don't want to worry. You're not there to worry and you want things to run a certain way. And so if for any trip, and so being able to do something so efficiently and in for a location like that, where it's very difficult to do on your own, like, super happy with the trip. Eva, thank you. Hassan, Syed, Muhammad, thank you. Thank you for listening to this.
And if you're interested in doing a tour in the future, and if you have, and you don't necessarily want to go alone, reach out to us. We may be putting a tour group together or a group together to go.
Yeah. If you want to travel with us to Morocco, just shoot us an email and let us know you're interested. So we're in the super early stages of that, but I think it is going to come to fruition at some point in the near future. So if you're interested in traveling with Elliot and myself, let us know. Okay. Your three favorite things about Morocco. Go.
Desert.
Yeah.
Stars.
Mm. And camels. All right. Mine, people. Better than your first answer. Then desert. The desert. And then the stars. Yeah. No, beautiful country. Loved it. I really did. It's so far removed from any other country I've experienced. And that's what really makes me like the countries the most, when you get somewhere that's like super, like completely brand new. It's not like going from Rome to Paris or Paris to London, where, yeah, it's a new city, new people, new cuisine, but kind of, you know, similar. This was like, you know, once you hit Merzouga, you are off of the beaten path. So
truly, yeah. There is no path. It's all sand.
No, loved it. So again, if you're listening to this, check out Berber Adventure Tours and consider joining us for a trip, the Traveler's Blueprint Tours, coming soon.
Yeah. And if you can, please give us a rating on whichever platform you listen on. If you want to support us financially, we do have Traveler's Blueprint merchandise, which you can find on Redbubble or TeePublic.
Yeah, I bought a hoodie and I love it. I wear it all the time.
And we got to get hats. We have stickers too.
Yeah, hats coming soon.
Hats coming soon. We got to put stickers everywhere, man. We haven't been doing anything with them.
No.
But yeah,
no.
Tune in next week.